Okay, it's 5:30. We've got all seven council members here. Let's start. The reason we'll start quickly is because we've got a hard break at 6:45 tonight. We're going to take those 15 minutes to break down the wall, remove the tables, set up some chairs in order to support the Planning Commission at 7 p.m., which is having a hearing tonight on Adventure Landing. So we did have additional items on this agenda, but we pulled them off. Hopefully, we will be able to get through the four that we have identified, A through D. The first one that we're going to start off is the City Attorney Annual Performance Evaluation Discussion. And for that, I will turn it over to our HR Director, Kim Bennett.
Hi, so good evening, Mayor and Council. And congratulations, Sandy, on a year with us. So when it comes to Sandy's evaluation, there are two stipulations in the City Attorney's contract. The first one states that she'll be evaluated at least once every year in her anniversary month. And the second one is the one I want to read to you. The City Council shall consider the results of her performance evaluation and the guidelines applied to department heads in determining the amount of salary and benefit adjustment for the City Attorney. So for your reference, I was going to let you know what the three things are that each director received. So at the conclusion of this year, each director will have received their evaluation merit. So the guideline we use for that is 2 to 3%. Two being meets, 2.5 above average, and then 3% for outstanding. The second increase was the 3% across the board that everyone got in on April 18th. And the third one is going to be the market adjustment increase from the recently completed pay study. The increase is expected to be in line with the FOP and the LIUNA contracts. So for this one, if the council wishes, you can approve it ahead of time, and then we can retro it to October 1st, which is what we're going to do for all employees once we get the final number and council approval. So with that, if you have any other questions on the evaluation, if not, I'll turn it over to you to discuss.
Thank you. I guess I'll start. So thank you, everybody, again, for taking some time to provide an evaluation for our first year with Sandy Robinson as our city attorney, and some really thoughtful comments. A lot of themes, I thought, like we saw with Mike's evaluation, so appreciate that. Especially, I think some of the things that I picked up on are that, and that we would hope, are that you're thoughtfully researching and getting back to us, and I think also to the department heads in a really timely manner. Although you're new to Florida, you're new to the city, so there's still a lot of learning to do there. I think that we have seen that you're willing to do the homework and not give us your off-the-cuff answers, but to really do the research and get back with us like you say that you will. The other item that I think a lot of us picked up on was the leadership meetings for the city, and I think that that's something that probably a few of us at least felt are something for you to take a look at, possibly being president. The reason, I think I was the only council member here when we made the decision to go in-house with the city attorney, but part of that decision was so that we had someone at the table getting ahead of things that might become potential problems down the road, or helping identify opportunities to streamline things, to support the department heads as they move forward, to support the council on actions as before they became problems. So I think that that's something to take a look at. So I'll let my colleagues share any comments.
I would like to say that pretty much the same thing the mayor said. I do appreciate all the research you've been doing, and I know you came into his organization right with everything that's been going on with the lifeguards and everything else. So, and also with the leadership stuff, I think you should be at the table as well. So, and welcome.
Only thing I would like to say is my scores are relatively lower than everybody else's, but that is just, I don't want you to think that's me not thinking you're doing a very good job. It's just the way I score. I grade 100 employees out of it, and pretty much to get over a 4, you've got to be, you know, doing something amazing. So I just want you to know that the scores that I gave for you, I consider very good scores.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, you came in at a really tough time with a lot of the stuff that's been, like, on your plate hasn't necessarily been things like that we're looking at today, like where you actually are getting to do ordinances and helping write legislation for us. I know you've had to deal with the lawsuit issues. And so I'm excited that hopefully moving forward, we'll be able to get back more to like what you're here to do, which is actually do the city attorney stuff and not have to defend a bunch of lawsuits, because I know that's probably the least fun thing on your plate. So I know when you first came in, one thing I appreciated is you met with all of us. I think that was a really nice touch. You got to know what issues concerned us, what we wanted to work on, whether they moved forward or not. You still took the time to give it your best effort, and I think that meant a lot. It meant a lot to me. I think it meant a lot to everybody, and I think that was reflected in some of the comments as well. And you know, I think that moving forward, there's always room for growth. But I think, you know, you came in, things kind of got off the rails, but you know, stayed on course, and now I feel like hopefully we'll be back on the rails and getting back to doing city business and doing what we are here to do, and not getting, you know, sidelined and sidetracked by all the lawsuits and stuff. So I'm hopeful for the next 12 months instead of the last 12 months, because I don't know. I'm amazed you stuck it out. Sorry, but I don't know. I would have left. So, yeah, it's been a tough 12 months. I know first 12 on the job, but excited to see where the next 12 takes us.
We actually probably should add combat pay too.
Oh, but I like that
good
idea.
Point. That's
a bad percentage somewhere,
yeah.
Sure.
I would just add, I don't have a whole lot to add, because I think everything's been said. You have been very responsive. You've done a great job, especially with researching and following up on the questions that we ask. And I hope that the first 12 months hasn't shell-shocked you, and hopefully you'll be looking forward to the next 12 months.
I'll just add that I think my comments speak for themselves in the evaluation, and in the interest of time, I would support moving forward with the pay increase.
I agree with that. The merit increase, I would support the 3%.
Yep, 3%. Yep.
The April 18th as well. I kind of feel like we should just wait on the market adjustment and do that retroactively once we have.
I agree with that. Retroactive.
Because we can always do that retroactively.
And her next evaluation, or at some point?
Yeah. When it's
done. Okay.
So we're going to reopen her contract? Because this is a year-long contract, so we'd have to reopen her contract to do the adjustment rate at a later time before her next evaluation.
I think we could just do it like we were going to do it when we did the Ecola one. It would just, we would put on there for Sandy to get that with all the other employees.
So we're agreeing to it now.
If you do.
We're agreeing to it,
well,
right?
I mean,
but we can't
then
just wait to see what it is and then agree.
Correct me if I'm wrong, we need to bring
to
a formal action item back in front of council. Correct?
Yeah.
For that, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, just in total, I believe we need to bring back a formal item.
For this?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put this on the meeting for Monday.
For this upcoming
meeting? Yeah, just for the 3% merit,
okay.
April 18th COLA at this point,
yeah.
If that's what I'm hearing.
Well, thank you. And it's been, actually, I would like to say it has been a whirlwind of a first year. I have enjoyed all my time here. And, you know, it's been busy, but it's not been out of form to what a city attorney or county attorney should expect. I do think that with some of the resolution with the VLSC issues, more time will be there for me to do some of the things that you all have mentioned, including attending more of those meetings. But I do want to emphasize that when I first started, I did go to them, the directors meeting as well as the leadership meetings, and I peeled them back as my schedule became more demanding, because those were the easiest places for me to create room to actually do some substantive work. So again, as the schedule, you know, sort of pares out a little bit, I will be attending more of those meetings, and it's going to take some muscle development. So let's just say that I will start my effort immediately, and I'll probably have to pull up some steam there to be 100% on all of them. But I would still also like the discretion when my schedule gets overloaded to have the luxury of not going to one or two as time permits.
Well, I think I trust your judgment on that.
I agree.
And just to give you all a little background, the director's meetings that she references, that's effectively a biweekly meeting where we spend about 15 to 25 minutes reviewing the agenda for the upcoming meeting. And then we go around and see if the departments have anything that need to be shared with other departments, things that are cross-departmental issues. The leadership meetings are once a month. They're approximately 2 hours long, and they can be anything from studying leadership exercises and examples to actually discussing implementing policies within our operations. So there probably would be some flexibility there if we're doing something that's more along the exercise line. Perhaps if she's got some workload that needs to be focused elsewhere, that's great. But if we're talking about implementation of policy within the organization, those might be more important ones to be at.
And if I get that information in advance, correct, that would be helpful. Yeah. So I don't have anything else to say except I'm very happy to be here, and thank you very much for your tolerance for this past year, and I'm looking forward to serving you more in the second year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Kim, thank you and your staff for compiling everything for us. I love, was the chart new with all the scores?
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that.
No, that
yeah, I like
that
it,
was new.
Yeah, that was for the first time you shared it with us.
We did it with Mipes.
You didn't.
We didn't see
anything
else.
No.
Really? No. Maybe not. I'll send it with Mipes too.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll jump into items B and C. For that, for the most part, I'm going to turn it over to Sandy since she's been doing a lot of the research associated with this. This is with regards to consideration of a couple of new ordinances moving forward. The first one is going to be smoking on city property. We received a memo that was drafted by the Parks and Rec manager with regards to what our current code of ordinances says. The big question comes down to whether or not you want to do anything related to the beach. And then we also have the police chief here if we wanted to get into a conversation about what enforcement might look at. Because it's all fun and games until the city of Jack's Beach has a 75-year-old in handcuffs pushed into the back of the car, caught on streaming video. And then we get into that discussion of, well, why was the individual arrested for breaking our ban on smoking, etc. And then there's a disconnect between council's expectations of enforcement versus the police department's handling of those scenarios. So we want to make sure we're all on the same page with that. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Sandy.
Okay, so as Mike said, I've been looking at the issue of regulating smoking, not simply on city property, but specifically in public parks and public beaches. And I focused my attention on that particular language because that is the authority that localities now have to regulate smoking in public places. We got that authority in July of this year. Prior to that time, smoking in public places have been preempted to the state. And with the change in law, which is located at section 386.209 of the Florida statutes, localities can now regulate cigarettes and vapor devices in its public parks and public beaches. What was withheld from that authority is regulating unfiltered cigarettes. Now,
Cigars.
And so I mentioned that in particular because if you've read the briefing memo that we prepared for you, there's a reference to our current ordinance, section 20-13, subparagraph C27 to be precise. But our current ordinance prohibits smoking, vaping, or the use of tobacco products in any park property, athletic area, playground area, or indoor facility. Now, based on the authority that we just received in July of this year, I believe our current ordinance is not available for us to use for enforcement purposes. And the reason for that is our current ordinance was adopted in 2020, 2 years before the locality had the authority to actually put this prohibition in place. And so if council is indeed interested in exercising this authority, I believe you're going to have to introduce and adopt a new ordinance. I would also recommend that when we consider adopting a new ordinance that regulates smoking in these places, that we don't try to replicate what we thought we had done properly back in 2020. And the reason for that is, even with the new authority granted to us, our current ordinance still exceeds the authority that we have. So if you look back at the language in our current ordinance, we prohibit tobacco products, the use of tobacco products. As stated, the state has expressly withheld regulating unfiltered cigars, which would be described as a tobacco product. So already you can see we've gone outside of that authority. And I think also one of the reasons that we would not want to utilize our current language is that the authority has been limited to beaches and public parks. And if you look at our current ordinance, it goes to indoor facilities and other areas that are arguably not constituted as a public park. And so for that reason, if council does want to step out in that space, I think a new ordinance is required, and a standalone ordinance would be the best way of going about that. So I just need the direction as to where you want to go.
I knew that we had this in here, and really until the last legislative session didn't even realize that we didn't have the authority to have this in there. So I do support taking advantage of the state legislation for our parks to the extent that we can. The note that I wrote to myself, especially in reading our, how we have it stated, athletic area, golf course, would that be exempted from this?
I think you make it an argument as to whether or not that constitutes a public park under the statutory language. We do have some authority to designate public parks, and I think you can take that to a reasonable extension of what we're reading, but not too far, such as the indoor facility couldn't be, I think, under a reasonable construction of words as we use them, be considered a public park.
Okay. So we would use the listing probably on first page in what we would consider public parks and take out athletic area to make our legislation match what the
yeah,
state has.
I think if you're going to do a new ordinance, I think you can beef it up a little bit and put in whatever provisions you have for enforcement. So if you look to the state statute for enforcement, they have certain provisions that you have to utilize in terms of your penalties. So if someone is found to be in violation of it, they do have an opportunity to contest their violation. And so there's an appeal process that the state set forth that we need to probably incorporate into our ordinance, but it's not there now with the current provisions of 20-113. Or to Chapter 20 in general. So before coming to this briefing, I did look at a couple of the localities that have either considered and or have legislation pending for adoption or have already adopted. And this is the regulation of the smoking. Delray Beach has some very good language, and the reason I focus in on them is that they said we will adopt by resolution the list of properties that will be considered public parks. And I think that's a good way for us to kind of approach this in increments, so at the back end of this we have been thoughtful as to those outdoor areas we want to be able to regulate with some due regard to how far we think we should go. They also incorporated some language that makes clear to the world that we're not going to go any further than what the state law permits us to do. And I think that's helpful because obviously we've done that in the past. I looked at, I think it's Daytona Beach Shores. But what they try to do is save an ordinance which is like ours, which is rather than coming and saying, look, we're going to just introduce a new ordinance, they tried to amend an ordinance that they didn't have authority to adopt in the first instance. I would argue that the amendment has no legal effect because you can't amend something that in essence doesn't exist. And it's a legal fallacy to say that the ordinance existed, even though you're doing basically the same thing. So as long as we have the opportunity to incorporate language that shows that we're going to be in conformance with the state statute and where our ordinance may differ, state statute and control, I think that's the best way of doing it. And I think we just need to have time to make sure we've got our language tight before we step out.
Vaping would be included, correct? Or is it?
The language of the statute is that we can further restrict vaping equipment, vaping devices. I think that by implication would include the act of vaping because you would have to utilize something to actually go through that activity. But the Florida statute doesn't mention vaping specifically. It doesn't use that as a verb.
I have concerns when it comes to enforcement. And as I know, Sunshine Park, when I go there to skate when I was in better shape, the kids that were skating around would vape. The parents that were there with the kids would vape. So how, I'm just trying to think ahead and what I said earlier about having a 75-year-old handcuff. I don't vape, I don't smoke. But I know when the times that I've been at Sunshine Park, I've seen parents, they're walking strollers and they have their vape in their mouth.
Sure.
How are we, I mean, do we want to add vaping to this, or do we just want to leave it alone? I'm just thinking for...
Well, again, I think if you borrow the language of the statute and you say, okay, no vaping generating devices are permitted in our public parks or on our public beaches, you really sort of take care of that without crossing the line. Because again, you're going to have to utilize something to engage in the act of vaping, and those devices are the things that are relied on at this particular time. I believe, again, one of those jurisdictions I referenced earlier, they did go out and say you incorporate the term vaping. I think again that might be a little bit aggressive, simply because I think the legislature could have used vaping if it wanted to, and it chose not to. And so for me, it's important to make sure that you work within that statutory language.
Chief, let me ask you a question. Based on face value of the ordinance as it is written, even though it doesn't hold any constitutionality, have you received any measurable amount of complaints or anything to that effect in the existing ordinance as it is in place?
No, I've received no complaints. And, you know, we must ask ourselves, what problem are we trying to fix?
Right, right.
I don't know that it's a problem right now.
Okay.
Matter of fact,
Right. So that being said, I'd be in support of you know, drafting a new ordinance. I would not be in support of including our golf course in that. I would want the golf course parsed out, knowing, being a golfer myself and knowing how it is attended.
Well, they're mostly smoking cigars anyway.
Yes, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, I mean, you have some that are chewing, which that's not referenced in here.
And I only brought it up because of the words athletic area
right,
in our current.
Well, and then on the front page you have Wingate Park, so now the question comes into play, is Wingate Park part of the golf course, or, you know, is the golf course part of Wingate Park, or?
I wouldn't.
So,
well, I think that's more of a reason for Sandy to rewrite the ordinance
yeah.
to be
sure,
more explicit
sure.
with regards to what does Wingate encompass and what does it do.
I think to see a draft and for us to go through it would be appropriate, in my opinion.
I would just add that having served on the Municipal Administration Policy Committee, this was something that was discussed by the Policy Committee for the last couple of years. And the primary focus from the people who were pushing this was trying to protect children. So it was focused more on parks where you're going to have children, like playing ball games and that sort of thing. So I don't know if that's a way we want to look at it. That was what I took. I don't know, Mike, would you agree that seemed
absolutely.
To be...
That was the primary focus, was to not only provide a healthier environment for children, but also set a better example for them by not having adults smoking around them in their presence.
The litter. Now, I have a problem with all that, like the litter and all that. But I don't see it as implementable on the beach. I can see it in the parks with kids and playgrounds and such. I think the beach is going one step overboard because we don't have police on the beach. You can just... We have 3 miles of beach, and that's just going to be... I think it's just unruly. You know, you can... They want to smoke on the beach, they can smoke on the beach. And I understand the cigarette butts and all that, but that's littering. That's a different thing. And if you want to get them on littering, get them on littering.
I think, yeah, and I work for the Cancer Society. I helped pass the smoke-free restaurant amendment. Like, I get it. But I think that's a huge step that I don't think Jacksonville Beach is in the right place for. Okay. Atlantic Beach is going to try it, from what I've heard. So that might be the Canary and the coal mine, although they are much less frequented than our beach. But I parks to me, for the purposes of, yeah, you can get away from, you know, where you sit at the beach is up to you, but the kids playing on the playground, you know, we need right. to keep that a nice sure. healthy space for them as much as we can. So mm-hmm. I think parks for sure, beaches.
I would be fine implementing it on the beach. Yeah, I've got a pretty severe allergy to it. I mean, you could smell it a couple hundred yards away if the wind's blowing in the right direction, and I look at it like speeding, we're going to put a fine on it and a ticket. Yeah, just about everybody speeds. Occasionally, you got to make the decision if you want to risk it and get a fine or something, get a ticket. I mean, we're not going to go run around and monitor. You know, we're not going to put it on them to do it, but if there's a problem with it, then, you know, you might get a fine at some point in time, but I'd rather go ahead and include it.
So how about if I just bring back a draft ordinance with both provisions cover public beaches and public parks, and then once you all see it in its at least a draft form, you can make amendments or suggest further amendments to it? Or
does anybody else besides Corey feel like we should be including beaches at this point?
I think at this point, for me, I'd rather see what Atlanta Beach does. And if it works, I mean, they also have, like you said, they're less frequented and they're a smaller beach. We have, what, 2 or 3 miles. I think concentration would be what, downtown area? That's more stuff for the police department to do, on top of them rallying up the transients and every mess. I think I'd rather wait, for me at least.
Can I get some information on how it's been implemented around the state to this point, and if it's been successful or not? Been successful.
It's been since July.
Yeah, so I can give you the more recent adoptions. I remember July is the start date, and so there are about 3 localities, maybe 4, that have already adopted something,
right.
And there are about 4 that are pending adoption in different okay. places. So I'm happy to share all of that legislation with you,
okay.
and maybe reach out to the ones that have adopted it to see if they've had
I'd like to
problems.
See the size of the city as well. You know, yes. that, when you look I into mean, that and send yeah. it out.
And one of the biggest problems I have is the cigarette butts mm-hmm. on the beach. I think I just find it pretty.
Already illegal though,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If we, I mean,
yeah, but if you're not smoking them there, you know you're not gonna be littering.
But I think we have to think about: do we even have a reasonable expectation of being able to enforce whatever we do pass? And when we did pass the smoke-free restaurant amendment, we excluded bars because at that time people just thought, no, we should be able to smoke in bars. Where it's adults, you know, you can choose to go in there or not. But now, if we put it on the ballot, most of our bars are already smoke-free. So I think there's a natural progression here that as things, you know, we can always go back and add beaches, even if we don't do it in this mm-hmm. go-around. So I think parks, for me, is the priority.
My main concern would just be littering is already the problem. Is already that littering is already illegal, but I'm concerned about a class, like a socioeconomic divide, and like we'll be looking like we are that much more unwelcoming.
Well, then you
because
have.
If you look at who smokes.
Then you have the air show, 4th of July, and New Year's Eve, or there's
10,000 people on the beach. And so it's like we're kind of like, these are ways around the edge to get people to not come here. And I'm uncomfortable with that. It's a public beach, and everybody should be able to go use the beach if they can find parking.
What would this look like for your guys? Would this be an educational thing, matter at first?
I think on the part, I would like to see it come from the city as far as the education piece, and of course from an enforcement standpoint, it would be education for a while. The second piece of this, we can do two separate things. I think y'all need to decide before it's made, civil citation or criminal citation.
Civil.
Because it kind of civil. Changes things. I'm for civil.
Yeah, I think that's civil. What the statute.
The second piece is, don't forget, parks as defined in our city is Latham Plaza also. So Latham Plaza now, maybe, okay, we'll ban it. What about when it's a festival and it's taken over by a vendor and it's a concert? Do we include that? Is it still banned on Latham Plaza? Or technically we can trespass warn? Is it taken over by the vendor and the vendor may allow it? So that's the other thing that we probably should work out before it gets to draft. Instead of just saying all parks, because Latham Plaza.
Yeah, so what I was suggesting is you have this sort of template ordinance, and then you have your list of parks that are designated by resolution. So you're going to have two pieces of legislation at the end of this.
Okay.
Your ordinance will not attempt to list all of the
okay.
parks.
Okay.
And I would just add that the Florida League of Cities is compiling a list of all the cities that have passed or are in the process of passing this legislation. So you might want to reach out to Tara Taggart. She's
her email.
Okay. And you should be able to get a comprehensive list.
We can ask her in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Over there.
To your point, Chief, one of the other experiences that we had was restaurants actually welcomed a smoking ban because they didn't have to deal with ashtrays and separate mm-hmm. seating sections. I would suspect that some of the event organizers, if we did include Latham Plaza, would probably be happy
good.
To blame the city on them not being able to allow smoking.
Sure.
Or then there's always a consideration of a designated smoking
exactly.
area.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would eventually be okay with no smoking on the beach if we made it like passive enforcement, like we do with not going on the dunes, and just put a no smoking sign, and then, you know, not wasting resources on actually going out there and stamping out people's cigarettes.
But I mean, I just think if you have signs that say no smoking and it's part of the don't do it, you're going to get 90% of people not doing it.
Yeah, that's what I would be more in favor of, just because as somebody, I don't have an allergy to it, but it definitely does not make me feel well. And so, like, if I'm around somebody, I'm going upwind of them because, like, I can't ride in a golf cart with my buddies who smoke because that
yep.
will, like, get sick. So,
yep.
Even if it's a cigar, I used to like cigar
talk. Well, if we were to do that, people will listen. Fortunately, the people that won't listen and the ones that annoy me are the ones that are smoking stuff that's illegal. And I smell it, and I hate that. But
well, that's all right.
It's another conversation.
Yeah.
But, yes.
I would just say, for me, I'm not sure that I'm comfortable with the beach at this point. I would want to start. My feeling is that we start with the areas that would impact kids first, and then we kind of get our feet up under us on that and how, you know, how we can best manage that before we go bigger, like with the beach.
I mean, I don't mind waiting, but I would think you would have more kids on our beaches than in any park. So I'm not opposed to doing any stages though.
Okay. So we'll focus on parks first.
Yes,
ma'am. Good direction on that?
I do. Thank you.
Shall we transition into balloons and sky lanterns?
And all the hard-hitting issues.
Well, this is being brought back to council because when I first got here a year ago, this was one of those things on my list of things to do. So I made it within that first year. that's the primary motivator for timing. In preparation for our briefing tonight, I sent out to you two draft ordinances for us to consider adopting that regulates the release of balloons and sky lanterns outdoors. And I will start out by saying we're going to start out with looking at, you know, what does the state law say with respect to the subject matter. Section 379.233 is the controlling statute, and it says in general that it is unlawful to release outdoors more than 10 balloons within a 24-hour period, except as specifically provided. And some of the examples for exemption are release for scientific purposes, hot air balloons, or balloons that are biodegradable and are hand-tied. Section 379.233 sets this as a non-criminal violation and fixes the fine for a penalty at $250. The two options that were sent to you in advance of this meeting are really based on the substance of ordinances that have been adopted by surrounding cities, and in the case of St. John's County, surrounding county. If you look at them, they're substantively the same, and with the exception of Atlantic Beach, not one of them provides for a penalty or an enforcement provisions. And so the
which means it just defaults to the 250.
It,
the state,
you know,
what the state defines.
I'm not going to step out there because of this problem. So we spoke about our regulation being out there before we were authorized to actually act. There was some discussion with some of the city attorneys, someone in the OGC office, basically about whether our ordinances, the local ordinances, conflict in any way with the state statute, because the state doesn't penalize this behavior until you get to 10 or more.
Oh, okay.
And so all of the local ordinances are penalizing one or more.
Okay.
And so there was this question initially as to whether anything below 10 was preempted to the state. And so the discussion has taken several turns, and the general feeling at this point is that it's not preempted because under home rule, the requirement is that it's expressly preempted to the state. And we don't have that kind of language in the state statute. But there's an uneasiness in saying, okay, you know, their penalties automatically default to the state because the statutory provisions are so different. With that said, if you look at Atlantic Beach's penalty provisions, they actually permit a fine for every single balloon up to $1,000. And so, you know, even looking at the statute, it's not completely lining up with that language. So where we go with penalties or enforcement is pretty much at council's discretion. But I would say that based on the concerns about sort of getting out there too far ahead of what the state statute really is saying, because I think in some ways it's an implicit preemption, that we do what the other localities are doing, which is if you're going to regulate it, you just put it in place and there's no enforcement or penalty provisions. And hopefully it has that same effect that Councillor Stokes mentioned. You know, there's that passive enforcement by putting it out there. Hopefully you will influence someone's behavior, but if they break it, you know, you're not going to have anything to do about it. I will say that the city of Jacksonville has a piece of legislation pending, which again mirrors exactly what all these other localities are doing. The status of that legislation is it's stalled in committee. And my understanding is it's going to be coming back in the week of October 3rd, and we'll see if we'll move forward. But some of the issues that were raised mirror the preemption issue. And unfortunately, at the time those questions came up, the patron for the paper wasn't available to answer the questions, and so there was a deferral. But that's it in terms of my presentation. I'm looking for direction. We can have something with penalty, something without penalty, or we can do nothing until we are more clear as to whether this, in fact, is preempted to the state.
Take something with a penalty, maybe?
I was thinking, you know, start with the lowest level, so without penalty, and see if that impacts behavior before taking out a bigger stick, which would be the penalty.
I was thinking the opposite.
getting
the citation out, just a citation, I don't have to pay for anything. I don't care. I'll do it again.
Well, we can certainly implement some sort of written warning citation without penalty on your first draft. And it's just more of an educational piece, you know, like this is a warning, you shouldn't be doing this, it causes danger to the environment, blah, blah, blah.
And Chief, just a question for you. If the police department got called to the beach where a release had already taken place, and you had individuals pointing to the person who quote unquote released the balloons, how would you handle that situation?
Generally, I would like to say, like of any most misdemeanors, although it's going to be civil, I would say it had to be witnessed by an officer to issue, not on probable cause, that we're not even there yet. So let me give you instead a hypothetical and actual. July 4th, 2018, Leon Bennett was shot and killed at 7th Avenue North of 1st Street. Black male. It turned out to be a self-defense case, standing your ground. Two suspects fled to Hawaii. We brought them back on some other charges. So I get two enraged phone calls from citizens I was in charge of the case, that there is 20 to 25 family members down on the beach getting ready to release balloons and they want something done about it. So we did not do anything, but I'm not going to roll in the middle of that with three cops and demand IDs and say, you're not to release these balloons. Not going to happen. I'll wind up on CNN. So there's that extreme, but it actually did happen. Now, can we do it by the 90% compliance when people call ahead, which does happen, and say, can we release sky lanterns and balloons? And they say no, and most people leave it at that. What I'm trying to go with this is, if we learn anything from the last 2 years, it's over criminalization or involving police in issues they should not be involved in, at least the problems. I'm not going to give you my ID. Well, you are going to give me your ID. Well, screw you. So, sir, give me your ID, and then it winds up headline news tased for releasing 9 balloons on the beach. So if that's where we want to go, there's tactful ways to handle this, and I have faith that my people would, but it comes to a point where if we're pushed, we're going to have to demand enforcement. So I just urge caution with all these things that may not be criminal, maybe civil is fine, maybe an educational campaign. If we don't attach some kind of penalty to it, everybody's going to know it's a bluff. I think Neptune's is like that too. Where it just
You bring up an interesting point, because the state requires 10 or more. When you have 25 people sitting on the beach and they all have one balloon, there's 25 balloons going up, but it's only one per person. So you really can't say, you released 10. Well, who are you going to pin that on? You know,
it just makes it difficult for enforcement.
Sure.
You know, and hopefully it'll never come to that. I just know that it happened, and
it did, right?
It's going to happen somewhere. It's
right,
going to be Jacksonville
but it did.
Beach. So,
yeah.
Sorry, I just think y'all all know you're laughing because you know it's true. So.
Yeah, I think the wedding venues and wedding planners—that's something that they would if they know, because most of what I see, especially the lanterns, had gone off at Casa Marina and they're on the beach. And the main problem I have with those is the safety issue, because they're coming down in neighborhoods when the wind's blowing the wrong direction, and you know, you're putting out fires. I think it is more of a messaging issue, and the other people other than the wedding plan, the weddings and stuff that do it, are kids. That accidentally let go of balloons. So.
Well, then then there's no intent either.
Yeah, so, right. Exactly. So I think
it's a civil in nature, and the most I would ever issue would be a warning, just saying, hey, you know, some kind of warning pamphlet that this is what happens when you release a balloon. And that becomes an educational piece. You know?
The other option is simply to wait to see what happens with the Jacksonville legislation, because it's intended to be countywide.
Right, exactly.
And so if they adopt it, then it sort of gets us off the hook and stepping out there too far. You know, we can just say it's not permitted in the county, but you guys weren't the one who passed this legislation that seems to be in conflict with the state statute. So from my perspective, I like that route rather than to have something where people are saying, I look to the state statute, it's 10 or more, why do you have something that is so far, are you like more restrictive?
I think it's more of an educational thing. I don't think there's like a huge group of people that are just all about wanting to let balloons go and lanterns go. I mean, it's an interesting thing to do if you're celebrating somebody's life or a certain event, but I don't think, just like throwing rice at weddings, when you realize that's not a good thing for birds and stuff, they're going to stop, you know, it becomes something that you don't end up doing. So I think it's a, what's that?
It's an urban legend.
And I don't think we see that happening a lot, really, with the balloons.
No, I think it's reduced, but I think, you know, there's definitely some vocal people on the side of wanting to get something in place that that will continue to be extremely vocal about it, if it saves one animal or, you know. But I do think we need something that's some kind of something civil, but I'm fine with waiting to see what the city does, because if it's countywide, then it's, you know.
If we would do the exact same thing that Jacksonville did anyway, then we may as well just.
Yeah.
But could we do, if there's passed, which I think it will, could we do a resolution of support or something to show that we're supporting this and to use that as an educational opportunity?
Yeah.
We could do that if you
I'd
want.
I'd like to see how theirs is written, too, because I have not seen how they drafted theirs.
I think also there might be a problem with countywide ordinances from municipalities.
Exactly. Right.
There's
I was going to say
you can't
that.
Enforce is Jacksonville City ordinance.
Right.
I know for a fact.
I asked him, and he said it's countywide.
Yeah, it's
so
countywide.
You
it's
could,
actually
you
in the
stronger,
legislation.
But we could, that this would cover both.
Okay, so what things are countywide? Because that's when we start getting into the consolidation issue.
When they adopt their items that are City of Jacksonville acting in the capacity of consolidated government in Duval County, when they do it for just the City of Jacksonville, that's when it's just for the City of Jacksonville. We've been getting contacted by their Office of General Counsel more frequently now with new legislation that's being brought up. And I know that when I was contacted a couple of months back for a piece of legislation they're working on, my request to them was that they either provide an opt-in or an opt-out for the local municipalities. Mm-hmm. So tell us how you're going to write it from a countywide perspective. If you're writing it to include all of the governments, including the four cities, then give us the opportunity to opt out if we don't want to be part. And if you're writing it for the county but you're leaving the cities out, then give us the ability to opt in. And that seems to be a tack that they're taking, depending on who's drafting the particular piece.
I guess my concern ends up being a little bit of a slippery slope. When do they decide that, oh, we're going to make this county billboards? When do they, what if
exactly.
they decide they're going to make billboards countywide that everybody follows what they want to do with billboards?
So,
is it zoning and are there specific things that they cannot preempt because they're the county?
The way I read their charter right now, no, they can't come into our localities and do things within our localities, but they can pass legislation that impacts or our municipality would have to follow. That's just sort of a general overview of what I read and I can remember. In terms of being aware of what they're considering countywide, we're trying to open up lines of communication so they tell us in advance those items that they're thinking about doing and to have the effect countywide so we can weigh in on them sooner. But that's where the conversation is right now. They do reference within the legislation that's pending those provisions of the charter that they're relying on to adopt this that would be in effect countywide. And the language that they have, they don't specify beach cities, they just say countywide.
Yeah, it's still a concern because it's going to, the lines of communication are opening and the lines of communication are going to be closed next summer because it's a new administration and it starts all over again with the new administration figuring out the relationship between the county and the beach cities.
Right.
So I'm a little concerned when I hear Jacksonville doing anything that is countywide that we then have to implement and follow. It's just.
So I'll go back through their charter and look specifically to see if there are some express limitations on when they can act in that way, and I'll let you all know.
Yeah, because I would be really concerned if they were to, say that we could have billboards here at the beach, you know, just because they're going to allow billboards countywide. I would not agree with that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know this to be a fact, but because this was implemented by the beaches councilman or introduced by the beaches councilman, Lori Diamond, that might have been the thought was just to have it through the whole county. I've never really known of anything else like this that was countywide, but that's why I specifically asked him if it's, does it impact the whole county or do we need to pass our own or what? So we did have that conversation. So I don't know how regularly anything like this happens or would happen. So but I think because he represends the beaches,
I think it starts to happen. Yeah. It can happen more often.
Well, right. Then that's my concern. Yeah.
And you.
I think that I would prefer to take the position that if they want to pass something, they can pass something, and then if we want to do the same thing, we can.
So under the Home Rule Act, again, we spoke about express preemption to the state. For counties, it's just preemption. So there could be an implicit preemption or an express preemption, but there would have to be something in place where there would be this declaration that particular matter signs is preempted to the county, or there has to be something else that would indicate from the language of either the charter or an ordinance that the county had control over that particular activity. If you didn't have that in place, then the municipality can adopt any ordinance that wasn't in direct conflict with the state statute, would be the governing provision, obviously, and then we should have the problems that I think I'm hearing. But as I said, I will go through the charter to see if they've expressly carved out some areas where if they adopt the legislation, their legislation will control. And we won't get to that question.
If they adopt it countywide.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah, that would be it. Because it's the county's legislation
right.
that preempts the localities. Legislation, and unlike with the state, it can be either implied or expressed, and I think that gives the county a little bit more movement than we have with respect to the state. But I think you're still dealing with the same issue.
Is there any authority that's extended in the interlocal agreement, when it comes to things such as this, that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of,
and I don't know.
I read it one time. 3 years ago, but
yeah.
I don't remember.
Sandy Mass suggests if we do an appeal process, which all citations have to be, we think consider special magistrate. We already have that process in place.
That process was set forth for the smoking in parks legislation.
Okay.
I don't recall any specific enforcement provisions
okay.
related to the balloon release.
Okay.
We simply had the fine.
Okay.
And so, the balloon subject matter is something that I'm not really comfortable with because the standards are so different between what I've seen on the local level and what's a violation at the state level.
And I think the state doesn't cover Sky Lanterns either.
No, it does not. It doesn't even mention Sky Lanterns. I mean, I talked to someone in OGC, and they wanted to say well, it does as a firework, but no, those provisions don't necessarily extend to sky lanterns, and fireworks are criminal. And so you can't mix those two provisions and think you can have any real consistent enforcement. And so, you know, there really is a concern that the dichotomy is just too great. You know, I mean, how do you put the world on notice? It's not in the state statutes that says, you know, localities can do something more stringent. So you're just out there. You could think you're acting in conformance with law, and then someone's telling you you're breaking the law.
I love that we use the word dichotomy talking about balloons.
So that's all I have. I'm just looking for direction as to where you want to go. We can start with what we have, we can build on what we have, or we can do nothing.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. Wait to see what Jacksonville produces, take a look at that, and then decide where we move forward on it. And then I'm in favor of no fines, making it civil in nature, and if we did anything, it'd be some kind of warning educational piece. That's just my opinion.
Push this one in here too.
Yes. And that's it for my contribution, I think.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
That gives us 20 minutes left to touch on item D, which is creating a development incentive by additional height downtown. The city council held a second open house with the public a couple months ago. You wanted to have a second one to see what additional feedback you might receive from the community or the public at large. So now we're looking to see if council has any direction for us on if you want to move forward with anything, and if so, what that anything looks like. So this is really time for the seven of you to talk amongst yourselves and see if there's a consensus for direction on staff as to how you want to move forward.
I can see why, but with Len Allen doing what he's doing with the Jay Johnson and keeping it all under 35 feet, and then with what they're doing here with Jack's Beach Town Center, I think that could be that's like the thing that's going to start kickstarting us in that right direction with the development. That said, if height did somehow miraculously, that we gotta do it. The whole purpose of height is, in addition to parking, is so people can see the ocean. So 35 at the between First and Ocean, 45 between Second and First, and up to 55 between Third and Second. So this way, you can enjoy the view and the scenery throughout the area. But you know, I'm still not convinced that the issue is height and not parking. I think the issue is if we modify our parking, or if we do a parking garage, or we somehow modify the parking requirements, that will alleviate the problem where nobody wants to develop downtown. Because I've always heard parking is the issue of why businesses are not coming. They can't accommodate the parking that's needed for the restaurant or whatever it is they want to open. Not the height. I've never heard somebody say, oh, I want to go higher. It's always been parking that's been the issue.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that it's solely parking, because I've met with developers in the past, and they have expressed that it's difficult to build reasonable spaces that make financial sense to them with 10-foot ceilings. And they need the extra space. They need the space for fire suppression. They need, because of the height they need for it. And so I think there is some limitations on it. I know that there are some developers that are kind of waiting in the wings to see what happens with this before they develop some empty spaces out here. I don't disagree with you about staggering it. That's a good concept. I don't know, you know, what that number would be and what it looks like, but I also think that there's an opportunity here that by offering these incentives, the city stands to gain, because we're going to have incentives. When if we don't, then they're going to develop what they want to develop, and there's no incentives for the city. So there's a benefit for us as a city to allow them to go up, and I think that the distance that they're going up is very limited. So I'm in favor of pushing it forward.
I'm in favor of pushing it forward the way we talked before. I'm not everything consistent. The staggering doesn't really work that much for me, because the only people that are going to be able to see, if you're going from 45 to 55, is only the very top floor of that one next door, and everybody below that's going to be blocked. So I think that would just add value to the very top floor of a adjacent property. So I'd like to just keep it just consistent the way we've been talking about it, and see where we can go from there. And I mean, this council always has the opportunity to say no. I mean, if they don't meet all of the requirements that we're putting in, it's not an absolute you're going to be able to build to this. You've got to meet all of our requirements, and I mean,
and you have to provide the incentives.
Yeah,
I know if you were to push this forward and say it's an action, and someone was to come in and wanted to build a mini metropolitan, I would vote it no, because that's an ugly building and it's not useful and it's not consistent to what we want. So, like you said, we could always vote no. On the incentive side, I think if we have more of a concrete language onto what we want, I think we could benefit and have a ball in our court. Like to push it forward.
I'm definitely interested to see, because I think it's a combination of parking and height. I don't think it's just one. I think if you just went height, you'd still have issues. I think if you just went parking, you'd still have issues. But I think just coming from knowing how, you know, property values and what it takes to actually make the development happen, you know, I think it's going to be a combo of the two. I hope that, you know, the LDC, I would strive to remove all parking requirements in the downtown CBD area. I think that would be a huge step. I know I'm going kind of outside of the realm, but I may not have a chance to talk on this issue. So I think that would be a huge first step. And then giving somebody the ability to have zero parking requirements and get an extra 10 feet and do some really cool buildings, I think could be really good. But I don't think it's just one or the other is going to make things work, because if we add, go to 55 feet, parking is still going to be an issue for whatever you're trying to build because of the sizing and the makeup of the downtown CBD. Looking at the property map, it's be very difficult. It's still going to be difficult to do something no matter what. If you do one or the other, it's still going to be very difficult. There's not a lot of money to be made down there. So I'm in favor of kind of pushing it forward side by side with the LDC review, seeing what pops out of that, what issues kind of come up out of those open houses. I think we're going to get a lot of the good info out of those, and council will be able to look at that. And just coming from my background of things, I think that you definitely need both if you want really good, substantial, solid development and redevelopment in this area, just because the value, the property value is just so high, and the costs of construction are just so high. And that's not going anywhere. It's not going to just dip down. Even if an 08 comes along, it's still going to be desirable property. Florida is too desirable right now. So I think it's you know, push it along, see where the LDC, I'd remove all parking requirements of development in the CBD and say it's a free-for-all for parking. If your business can make it, go for it. And I think that'll do a lot, and I think giving somebody the ability to create some really cool buildings will go a long way too.
Well, and I've also seen concepts that are akin to the development where Ruth's Chris is, Imposters, mm-hmm. and all that, where there's a retail facade in the front, and there's a parking structure that's behind it. You wouldn't even know it was there unless someone told you it was there. And where they have rooftop, you know, amenities as well, whether it's a bar or a restaurant. And so the parking's kind of hidden and layered in between. So the opportunity is there to do something, but again, you're clipping yourself, I think, if you limit it, because that could be an incentive for the city as well, that you make that parking public parking for public events. So
my feeling is, I don't support changing the height limit in the downtown area, but that's my personal opinion. I see, just like Georgette has said, I see that we have people who are, they see that there's value in developing right now in the downtown area within the limits that the voters voted for. I also appreciate the incentives, though. I understand the reason for the incentives and the fact that that would give some control to the council. All that being said, bottom line is, I'm glad that this is something that would have to go before the voters, because ultimately it should be their decision and not a few of us who sit on the council. But personally, I feel like it's that height's not the issue. I think I agree that I think parking has a huge component to it. And you look at our neighbors, and they're all, you know, there's some really nice commercial developments that are going on around us in cities that have 35-foot height limits. And you look at the one on 3rd Street in Neptune Beach, they've put some parking, I believe, up underneath the commercial building that they're building. And it's really nice, and it's within 35 feet. And to the point that Chet said, you know, this area is desirable right here in the downtown area. I think we have people who are just going to, they're waiting to see what we're going to do. Are we going to put something on the ballot or not? And, you know, but then there's others that are willing to go ahead and develop because they see the value in developing within the 35-foot height limit. So,
yeah, I think a lot of the empty lots are, and I know some of them, they are waiting to see if it gets on the ballot, and they're not moving until they know one way or another, and that if it gets onto the ballot, they're still not going to move on anything until they find out if it passes or not.
Well, I think what needs to also be said is the height limit's still in play.
Right.
You can't build over 35 feet. You have to provide that incentive.
Yes, so the value of your property goes up for you to sell it if you give them that option. Yeah. So there are people who will hold it.
Sure.
And so at the with this always bringing it back, I don't think is necessarily healthy for the different development in downtown. We tabled it, now it's back again. We tabled it twice.
We haven't always brought it back. This is the first.
No, because we decided not to put it onto this ballot, and now they're waiting to see if it goes on to. Yeah, we did. We decided not to put it on this ballot with the 16.
Because we had 16 other ones on there, and we never discussed putting it on this specific one.
It's not bringing it back.
So now they're waiting on to the next ballot, and this eventually has to get decided one way or another, so people will start making a move downtown.
But also saying that the property across the street and Lynn Allen's property, you know, didn't wait for it. Their properties wouldn't have qualified for any potential additional height anyway, so they have no choice but to go ahead. They don't meet the half block minimum.
Lynn
does. No, he doesn't.
He owns the whole block except for his pizza.
He already owns. You have to have the full frontage on one side.
He has second.
So he has second. So he has the parking garage, but he already has an existing building on that property, right?
That he could knock down.
You're going to knock down Jay Johnson Gallery?
Sure, he could. So, doesn't mean he would, but he could.
Yeah, I'm just saying you can't just say, you know, the height doesn't matter to them. If, you know, just because the way we're talking about it, it really would not have impacted either of those properties.
So that kind of brings up one of my concerns, and I've expressed this to Mike and Heather, I think. The things that, you know, you think about the unintended consequences, there's still a lot of blanks on our proposed wording and the incentives that we would propose, or the requirements that we would propose. I want to make sure that we don't get into a position where someone would be incentivized to tear down an architecturally significant building in our community. So I think that there needs to be some sort of, I don't know what it would look like, but some sort of firewall there that someone's not going to tear down Casa Marina, Jay Johnson. You know, there's only a few significant buildings.
You can include, can't we designate significant buildings?
I don't know. Legally, I don't know.
Mangoes in that block is not his, not wouldn't fall into yours, would it?
Yeah, there's...
1973. Yeah.
Basically, anything that's more than 50 years old as a structure can qualify for historic preservation. So any building in the downtown that's more than 50 years old, pre-1973, you could write your criteria in such a way that any building that exceeds that age, you know, has to have special dispensation from council to even consider being thrown out.
Can't be right, though. 1973? That's not 50.
Yeah. That's the scary part when you can look at your community and say there are entire neighborhoods that qualify for historic preservation based on minimum criteria of 50 years. But that's the standard used at the national level. You know, when they adopted that in 1970, whatever, it probably sounded good because you're going back to 1920.
So Mayor's building is older than that.
Well, the buildings like the Jay Johnson Gallery, I believe, are much newer than that, correct?
Right.
Whereas a building like Casa Marina would be much older than that. So, you know, it really comes down to what criteria you ultimately would, assuming that it would have passed, whatever criteria you would select for getting the threshold of being able to move forward. You know, clearly, demolition of existing structures is something that the council could have weigh in on before any final approval is granted.
Well, I think that's what this allows us to do. It allows us to have that ability to weigh in on it. And to Councilmember Nichols' point, I don't know that there's a whole lot of properties that do qualify for it. I know there's some empty land around the beach in our downtown district. And I still say that the narrative's getting lost that we're not allowing the height limit to be released. That's not really the case. You know, you still got to stick with the 35 feet unless you meet the prerequisites. And if you don't meet them, then you're not going up. And the going up is only 20 feet maximum.
What is the deadline for the next ballot? You knew I was going to ask this question.
I believe it's November. But I'm not 100% sure.
For the March election?
For the March election.
December.
But if you wanted it in May...
I thought it was like 60 days out.
Yeah, that seems so.
Yeah.
Can we confirm that?
We'll find out and let you know.
Yeah. I believe it's 180 days from the election date is when the county has to have the information from us.
I now question that 180.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, and is that 180 from the general election?
General one, but on the ballot. Are we going to put on the ballot or the primary? On the general or the primary?
Or the primary, right. Because the general would be in May.
Right.
And I think that's why the November date is sticking in my head. Because that would be the 180 days.
Well, the next one in March.
That's primary.
That's the primary, but then there's an election in May, correct?
General's in May.
Yeah.
I think it's a unified election, so it doesn't.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's just two elections.
That'd be November. Yeah.
There's no way it's 6 months.
No way.
Can it? Any miss? Can't.
We'll double check it.
Okay, thank you. And recount that 50
years. September, it seems like we just went through it.
We've got 6:45.
Yeah, wasn't there something about the
Trump?
Yeah, I thought we went to something else. Are you going to give a quick Ian update?
Yes. So first of all, I think I got the input from this that I need. Just wanted to give you all a quick heads up. The chief came over and just showed me and received a text from Fire Marshal Steve Shotto. We have been placed into a tropical storm watch at this point for Duval County. The latest model runs are still tracking even further to the east than they had been earlier in the day.
East or west?
East.
Yeah, it's
further
west.
To the east. Nope. Okay. Further to the east.
Okay.
They're now calling for a direct hit with a Cat 3 in the Tampa Bay area. And then having the storm basically stall out there for about 12 to 24 hours and then start a slow move due north, which would bring it just to the west of Jacksonville and passing us as a tropical storm.
And that side is heavier with rain and wind, right?
Yes.
We'd be on the bad side.
We would be on the bad side. The rainfall totals this morning from the National Weather Service with Al Sandrick, they were predicting for our area 10 to 15 inches of rain over the three-day period. Obviously, that was depending on track at the time they were making those projections. They're doing another call tomorrow. Those numbers may change plus or minus depending on relative intensity of the storm. But we are taking all of our precautions internally. Based on the strength of the storm, chances are we will likely stay in place and perform our EOC responsibilities here on the island in Jack's Beach. Depending on weather conditions, we may have certain facilities that we close down on Thursday and Friday. We do not know yet. We'll see as we get a little bit closer, and we will keep you all in the loop on it.
Correct.
10 to 15 inches of rain, as you can imagine, it's a lot of rain. Probably going to have a lot of flooding.
Plus, there's a king tide, plus we're saturated. Plus
king tide saturated, and depending on which way the winds push, we may get some localized bad flooding.
And so,
on
a happy note, I don't know, say something happy.
Sure.
I thought that you knew something.
Yeah, no, I didn't share. Oh, you're just going to make my
phone. So, to end on a happy note, you all have plenty of time to take a 10-minute break, and then go sit in on the Planning Commission if you'd like.
How about we're supposed to do that? How about congratulations, Jaguar?
Yeah.
Congratulations, Jaguar.
Wait, I want to, hold on a second. Future briefing topics, though. Are we not going to bring that up?
Yeah. I think we're up to the wall.
You already did yours.
Well, I mean, I would still like for us to have on a future briefing discussion about the VLSC and what...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because this is, I mean, now that...
Now that, right.
Yeah, the city attorney and I have spoken. We're going to try and see if there's an opportunity to bring that back in November.
Okay.
Discussion with council. Right. I just wanted to make sure, though, that we got consensus from the council.
Sure.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you all.